Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
We're thinking like we kind of have, like, we're in the very baby stages of wanting to do a podcast.
Really?
And so it's Podbean is the one that I think I signed up for.
So we'll reverse the roles sometime and we'll have you guys out once we do get ours kind of
established. Up and going?
No, it's just kind of like got the name, got kind of like the idea, but not, we haven't really done anything.
What's going to be the theme?
What's the name?
Oh, The Time Between. But we are like, definitely don't know. He listens to a lot of podcasts, but I, so it's probably really just random.
So the meaning behind the name is like, in 42 years of life, we've found that oftentimes our favorite parts of life are the times between the moments that we planned.
Interesting.
And so,
like, what's an example?
So for example, let's say you're going to plan a trip. You're going to go to Walt Disney World. And you have these really high expectations of, this is what it's going to feel like. This is what it's going to look like. This is what I'm going to feel when I'm there. And oftentimes when we reflect back on the best parts of our life, it's actually not those big crescendo moments. It's the times between the moments that we had planned that are the most special. So I can think of like multiple times in my life where maybe it was an interaction. We love to RV. We love traveling around in our Class C motorhome. And so we've had these epic destinations, you know, national parks or, you know, specific beaches that we wanted to go and see. And although those were amazing and then they were wonderful, sometimes it's like a rest stop and you just happen to cross paths with like this person who needed something that you had in that moment. And you get to just like inject a little bit of hope or something into their day. And those are the times between, because you can't really prepare for those. Like today, when we all prepared for what today was going to look like, you're not really preparing the moments and the little times between the blocks of time that you had.
Interesting.
So that's kind of our...
That is a great perception to have, because now you have five kids, ages 7 through 17. And so when you go on a trip, I'm assuming it's all of you, you're jamming into the motorhome. And so there's chaos, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's never exactly as you plan, right?
And a dog.
And a dog. And the dog comes along with. Okay. What's your dog's name?
It's Amelie's dog. So it's Ari.
Ari.
Yeah. Golden Retriever. He sheds like crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
But Golden Retrievers have the best personalities.
They're everyone's friend.
They are. So you go and you've got like all these different personalities and you're crammed in together. And so you learn to work with each other or hate each other. And that's the magic of it. So I don't like being around crowds. And I try to avoid those situations where we go to theme parks and things like that, where there's main attractions. But I do like going out and getting outside and being with my family. And it seems like to me, it was this epiphany as you talked about that, what you were discussing, the times between, that it's the discussing it with the kids and what they can do to contribute. Okay, this is what you're going to pack and this is how we're going to get ready. That those are the memories that I most fondly, you know, take from the whole trip is the excitement of it all, the anticipation, Christmas Eve of it instead of Christmas morning.
Exactly. I mean, we have many memories from, you know, just over the years of the planning and all the work that goes into it. And then it's often just the moments that you just didn't even plan on that just completely catch you by surprise.
Does one strike you right now that you can just pull out of the back of your head?
I mean, there's so many really, but so we've done, when we travel in the RV, what we'll try to do is we base the trip more around a turnaround point, like kind of like the U-turn.
Okay.
So if we're leaving Yuma, we'll say like, well, what's the U-turn point? And so we try to pick some pretty obscure ones. One time it was the Mackinac Bridge way up in, you know, the bridge between Southern Michigan and Northern Michigan. This last trip that we did, the U-turn was Key West.
Okay.
So we literally drove our RV from Yuma, Arizona to Key West. But the one of the ones that was really special was we were going from here to Kansas to visit family for Thanksgiving. So it was a pretty normal American family type road trip. Well, we decided to kind of divert and go through Colorado and take some smaller roads to get there. And we had a really rough go for a day. We were up at 13,000 feet, crossing the Colorado Rockies, hit snow, which is never fun when you're in a motorhome.
Was it Long Pass or something?
It was called Monarch Pass.
Monarch Pass.
Yeah, on Highway 50 or 56, I can't remember. But we're just stressed. You know, it's not fun. The kids, they're in their own little world. They're like, you know, can I have cereal? And I'm like trying to keep it on the road.
The road's icy. Like there's snow. It's like, oh my gosh. It was very stressful.
So we get to the top and we pull over and there's literally three people on the summit. There's us and two other cars. And we wanted to use, because it says like Monarch Pass, elevation. There's like a little gift store. And we were like, hey, we've worked our butts off to get to this point. Like, let's at least get a family picture up here. Mm-hmm. And we get out and I kind of notice out of the corner of my eye that there's a gentleman probably in his mid-20s sitting in a car. So as a dad, you're kind of like, all right, what's going, you know, like, hey, come on, kids, stay close.
Stranger danger.
So then he gets out of the car and then I'm kind of like, okay, you know, like, so we go into the gift shop, we buy some little stickers for the kids and we come back out and he's waiting there. And he starts kind of talking to me. And at first I was just kind of like, hey, you know, like not now, we don't have the time. But I guess it was his demeanor that just kind of conveyed to me like that he needed help. And we just started talking and I ended up finding out that he had just lost his job. He had just been fired. He had just lost his mom and he was basically suicidal.
Whoa.
And he was sitting there on the summit contemplating what to do. And so I had the kids go in the motorhome and it was freezing cold, mind you. Like, and we get cold very easy being from here.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't remember his name. I remember his face clear as day, but him and I sat out there for probably 25 minutes. And it was the weirdest thing because he looked me in the eyes and he said, how do you have so much peace and joy? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about because I'm pretty stressed out. Like just getting to this moment, was very stressful. Everybody. But it was really cool to just have those opportunities in life where someone sees that you're carrying something that they don't currently possess. And I kept it very, very light and just said, dude, there's more. Like this isn't the end of your story. There's more, you know, God's got some awesome plans for you coming up. Don't throw in the towel now. Like no one wants that for you. And I mean, he started crying. We hugged each other, you know, it was just kind of one of those cool things where it was like, I don't know what ended up happening. Obviously I hope that things ended well and that, you know, he's reemployed and he's got fresh vision and hope for his future. But that was just one of those things where it was just like, I didn't plan that for my day. That was nowhere on the radar.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those fun and special moments where I knew that I was at the right place at the right time.
And I think what's cool too is he did take a family photo of us. But
yes.
Before he did, he had the camera and it faced towards him. So it took his picture.
On accident.
Oh. On accident. So now.
Or was it? And then, was it an accident?
Yes, exactly.
and then took our picture. So when we have like our, we have our photos come up and we can like look at them over and there's like, oh yeah, there's that guy, you know?
Yeah, it's awesome. Pretty cool how it worked out.
Well, so those that are listening, We have Carrie and Stuart Thompson with us today, and I don't know you. Sean said, hey, we should have these guys on, and we're so thankful that you came on. They're really neat. He met with you not too long ago, and he was really talking you guys up. So it sounds like, where did you grow up? Are you from Yuma? But you mentioned Kansas, so.
And California.
Mm. Oh, yeah. So
I've been everywhere, man.
Yeah. So I grew up in Redding, California. Mm. So that's kind of where I grew up. Stuart, not too far away. And we met in our 17. Mm. We met at 17. Like, he was in a band. I was into music. My friend and I were like, hey, like, there's this music festival up in Washington. We should go up there. And like, I know these people, like, they're in a band, they're going to play there. We should all just go and hang out. And so, I got permission from my parents and then went up there one summer and met Stuart there. And then,
so even though you're both in California, you met in Washington.
Technically, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. And, at first when we met, I was like, I do not like this guy. Like,
why?
I had a guitar. I was playing it, and then he was like teasing me or something, and he like put my guitar in the trash can. It was like notice me or something.
Drummers are better. Drummers are better.
The funniest thing though, that
that's how boys the way do that it.
Teenagers try to get attention is by like, yes, annoying the girls.
Yeah, you don't have the maturity. Or self-confidence to do something nice. So mm-hmm. you do something mean to get the attention.
But
yeah.
Then like, I don't know. It just, there was a shift because I just was like, there's something different about this guy. Once you start talking to him and, so we hit it off, came back, to where we lived. And then, I don't know, we just started dating and then we got married. So like I graduated high school and then I got married that summer. Like mm-hmm. we got married that summer. So it was like,
that's kind of unheard of nowadays.
Yeah. And then it like, we have a daughter and I'm just like, I can't even imagine. Yeah. Oh my gosh. But, so
she's 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you were what? 18.
She's graduating. This June.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just telling her the other day. So like, if you were in mom and dad's shoes, you would graduate in June and you would be getting married in July.
Yeah. Like moving out of our house.
Yeah.
And then going.
Yeah, we literally moved from our parents' houses
to be
together.
Yeah.
Like zero time for real life. Uh-huh. It was pretty wild. And we were 18. And so it was just like, you're kids.
Yeah.
You don't know anything.
Yeah.
You're figuring
out.
And you are
learn.
Broke. And not only are you broke, but you also don't have wisdom, you know? So a lot
Perfect
of hard
combo.
Lessons. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so give us, I love that sketch of how you met. Give us a thumbnail sketch of how you got here to Yuma. What was the epiphany that occurred in your life as you're going along? Maybe tell us your career path and then what led you to come here to Yuma.
So we were both born and raised 1 hour apart in far, far Northern California. Way north, like big timber, big mountains, very, very rural. And it's fairly gloomy in the winter. It's rainy, it's cold, it's foggy. And so, like we just mentioned, we got married at 18 and I started my own construction company and basically became a licensed contractor and was slowly building a company. But when it's rainy and it's cold, the phone stops ringing.
Mm-hmm.
No one's calling you anymore, especially when you're 20 years old. Mm-hmm. You don't have that reputation like the big guys do. So out of just desire to see the sun again, we would literally start snowbirding. And Carrie hated that I would use that term because she's like, you make us sound like we're seniors.
I was like, come on.
But I was like, that's literally what we're doing. So why try to mask it?
Uh-huh.
So at a very young age, we started traveling south because I had no work. We would just save up some money in the summertime and we would come down here. And so basically we started spending 3 weeks and then that turned into a month and then it was 6 weeks. And then before we were fully done, we were spending between 8 and 10 weeks down here each winter. Well, as we started growing a family.
You're in Yuma?
Yeah, in Welton.
Welton.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any kids yet?
Eventually, yeah. So we started having a couple kids, which does get more involved and difficult because you're pulling them out of school. So then that transitioned our lifestyle into, okay, now we're going to be homeschool family because we want the freedom to be able to do this. And basically we just kept doing that over and over and over until one night I just came home, sat on the couch. I was at a church event and I just sat on the couch and I told Curry, I think we should move here.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hanson at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Because yeah, at that point, we were down here.
Yeah, we were down here for the winter.
For the winter.
And it was just kind of a wild idea. It was like, what if we just committed and we just went full in? Which was pretty crazy at the time because I had about 20 years under my belt with an established business. The business was doing very well. There wasn't anything pushing us out.
So this wasn't too long ago. You were in your late 30s?
About 4 years ago.
Okay, like 38 or so?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when he said that, I was like, I laughed out loud. I was like, no.
Yeah.
That is not happening.
Uh-huh.
And, but it was when we got back. It was time to go back. It was starting to get hot. So that's usually when we're like, okay, it's time to leave. And when we got back, yeah, things just started shifting in my own heart about what would it look like and analyzing like, well, what is this community that we're in right now, which is up north? Like, what is that community offering the kids? Cause like, it's just something you really got to think through. It was a pretty small town that we were living in. And, yeah, there's just a shift in culture and shift in friends, shift in church. And that was just like, okay, like, yeah, it took me a while, but I came around and we did it.
It sounds like it would have been around the pandemic time. Is that
right after that? Yeah,
right after. So you're in California. So lockdowns are pretty prevalent, maybe not in your little town at the time, but you still were under a lot of restrictions. Did that play into what you were thinking?
I would say for more than that, because like, you know, you get a lot of people who are like, I'm not wearing masks. I'm not doing this. I'm, you know, so like, it's still kind of like, people were just kind of, it wasn't the same as like maybe being in San Diego or LA or something like that. It's so that wouldn't be the main thing, but just seeing the shift in friends and people who you thought were one way and then being another way. And, that was a big part, but like, as far as like how it affected us, I mean, the kids were already homeschooled, so like, I didn't have to face what everybody else really faced, which was like that big shift of like, you know, what it did to the kids and things like that, being pulled from school. Cause like, we just had our routine, so we just continued on our routine, but it was just, so that was part of it. Also, there was like more of a drug culture where we were living, and it was just not going well, you know.
I think what we kind of started identifying was, it's a wonderful town. If we could snap our fingers and go there right now, you would be like, what a typical, beautiful American small town. But what we were realizing, like a lot of small towns, is there's a glass ceiling, and that can be for teenagers, but it can also be for, you know, your growth as an adult. There's a culture that you just kind of abide within, And we could see that there was a much bigger world out there that we wanted not only us to be able to experience, but we wanted our kids to get to experience. And with the glass ceiling of these small towns, sometimes you either got to live under that and work, you know, a local job, like the big industry up there is timber. So that's the biggest employer in this town.
Surprises me.
Yeah. It's,
so they're still harvesting timber in California.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's an eighth of a mile from our house is a massive lumber mill.
Okay.
Because sometimes when people say like, oh, California, like you're in
urban jungle,
you're in San Francisco. I'm like, oh no. Like Northern mm-hmm. California, like way up north.
Yeah.
You know,
basically Oregon.
Yeah. Nearly to Oregon. Yeah. But I think what's been really, really neat about it is it didn't make sense on paper. It didn't make sense in our minds of like, yeah, this is a promotion in life. This is advancement. It was just kind of really out of left field, but a few years into it, here we are. And we have the ability now to look back and just go, man, everything about it has been tough. It was not... you know, we're not here because I'm a Marine or I have a job that told me to come here. In fact, it's been just the opposite. So, I was sitting on my couch about 4 months ago, one morning, and I was just kind of doing my normal morning routine. And I was complaining to God, basically just saying like, I got to understand like a little bit of what's going on. Cause we had a really good thing going. Mm-hmm. And my company was just increasing year in, year out. And I got down here and I am starting from the ground zero. I am no one here. And so I just started thinking of drawing like this graph as an illustration to show God. And so basically it looked like a piece of paper. And I started on the left corner and I said, so this was me at birth and this was my wages and this is how I was doing. This is when I bought my first house,
trending upward.
Boat, all trending upward. Right. I get up to the top and I drew a line. I was like, this is when I moved to Yuma. And now look at my life. Like, it's embarrassing. It's humbling. It's coming down. I haven't quite got my feet on the ground yet here with building or construction, because we're still trying to get our roots down. We just finished building our home. We're actively trying to get the kids plugged into school and, you know, and just friends and new community. And so I just kind of was basically having this conversation, but needed this graph to kind of prove my point. And I had the thing on my lap.
No,
exactly. Okay. And I literally, I just felt like God said, Stuart, flip it. And so I was like, I waited a second. He was like, flip it. And so I took the paper and I flipped it this way. And if you flip it end over end, and I just basically heard the Holy Spirit say, this is heaven's perspective of your empire. So then what I saw was, as I was building my wealth and my kingdom, the first boat we got, the first house we got, the first $100,000 a year, whatever, right? Whatever man achievement, I was so focused on me. And then when you flip it, now my world was all about me, but I wasn't really thinking like long-term. In fact, I was kind of a jerk, if I'm being honest. And so this transition to Yuma has actually been kind of a fresh opportunity to just really trust and kind of lay down some of the, you know, the people that we were and go, hey, you know, it's not all about like your tax return at the end of the year. Like, that's not who I am anymore. It's not about, you know, the, you know, projected gross income and whatnot. I mean, that was so a part of my identity. And I used to actually introduce myself like as a contractor. Mm-hmm. I was so proud of that. But this season has caused us to just strip so many layers of these things that we prop our lives up with you know, of who you are, what you own, what you possess, and just be real and authentic and have, you know, real relationships again. And it took me quite a long time. It honestly took me from like you said, the age of 38 till this last June. I was complaining almost constantly about this. It's like, this doesn't make any sense. What is going on? And finally, something shifted in me this last summer where I identified, oh, I don't have the ability to say I trust you, because I've been trusting in myself for 38 years. And as a man and as a provider for your family, it's really easy to trust in yourself when things are going well. But when God begins to like strip back layers of your life that you were using to prop you up and felt really safe, all of a sudden you become really vulnerable and you have to question, you know, like, do I have the ability at the age of 42 to say, I just trust you again? Because that was easy to do when we're broke, right? It's easy to say, like, I definitely believe that God has the best interest in my life when I'm broke and I can only go up. Mm-hmm. But when you've done well, are you able to say, all right, like, let's do it again? So,
Carrie, how was it watching this? Like, have you been like, get up, let's go? Or is it more like, yeah, I don't know why we did this. It's been a struggle.
Well, like when he was talking about, you know, like struggling with the change from being like the full-time construction guy to like not doing, I mean, actually, it was like when we first got down here, there wasn't any construction happening on our house because we were staying in like this. Yeah, so that is part of the story. So I was like, when we decided to come down here, his parents have a house. And so next door to his parents' house is a like a desert trailer, like this kind of like trailer. I don't really know how to explain it. It's like a trailer from the 40s with an add-on. Mm-hmm. Like there's some mice in there, you know, like
asbestos, lead paint,
probably all the good stuff. And so it wasn't this really comfortable transition to being down here. It was actually pretty humbling, kind of rough, because we actually still had our really nice house up north, and so we're coming here and we're, you know, staying in his parents' desert house next door and trying to figure out like, okay, well, what do we want to do? Like, are we sure this is going to work? And with the kids, when we told them that we were leaving up north, we were like, you know, had sat them down. Hey, we're going to try this. We're going to like, just for a year, we're going to see how it goes. And at the time, like the response from the kids was not great. It was kind of like, my friends are here, like our, you know, our family's here. And I'm like, okay, we're just going to give it a try, like just for a year. And so that also plays into it. So you're transitioning your family. Your kids are, you know, hesitant about it. Like I'm just kind of like, we'll see how it goes. You know, I feel like we should give it a try. And then in the meantime, you know, being down there and being next door to like your parents, your parents' house, and then meeting people, and like for Stuart to feel like when he meets people, like you kind of want to be like, this is what I do for a living. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so he'd be like, yeah, we moved down here. Like I'm a contractor. I'm like this and that. And
did I have an accent like that?
Maybe. I'm a contractor. and so then I had to like tell him, I was just like, you don't have anything to prove to anybody. Like you don't have to say I'm a contractor, I'm working on doing this and this and this, and like look at, I'm gonna be doing something great. It's like you don't have to justify yourself about who you are. And it's just, I know that's hard, but that's just you are who you are, you know, you don't have to be somebody, you know.
It's been funny because someone said to us, it's like, oh, it sounds like a midlife crisis. And I'm like, whoa, 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 like, step off. Like, yeah, you have no idea. Like, no, it's not. It's almost the opposite. Cause I think when we think of a midlife crisis, you're thinking of like you're trying to prove who you are. But in this situation, it's kind of been an undoing, you know, it's kind of been like a stripping away. Like Carrie said, I felt like a bit of a loser coming down here, and we were starting over. And so we felt like we had to have some sort of an identity. And she said so many times, like, honey, you don't have to prove anything to anyone. Like if they like you, then they'll like you for who you are, not because of what you do, you know? And that's been years in the making, especially again, as a man, I think we like our identities. I mean, I know we do. Just it's hard to kind of let that go, but it's been really, really fun season.
Yeah, it's been good. Like, so when we told the kids, like, we'll give it a year and like we'll touch base to see how everyone's doing, and we went to plan to go up for the hottest part of the summer, I think. The hottest part of the summer here, we went to go up north, which is still hot, but and when we told the kids, like, we're gonna go up north just for a month or two, our oldest, the one who was having the hardest time, she actually was like.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. Want to hear more Life, Death, and the Law? You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, or any other platform you listen to your podcasts. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Crying because she didn't want to go back up.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
She just had plugged in, the kids were thriving, and there's just... she just found like this place of like culture and I don't know what shifted in her, but yeah, I mean, she had her own like exterior bedroom up north, like that's just for her, lots of things. And she just said, there's nothing up there for me. And I'm like, wow, that is a huge shift, because when we were leaving there, it was like she had just gotten her bedroom done. She had just gotten, you know, like the material possessions, you know, like the things that make you comfortable. And here we are, like in this little trailer, there's seven of us and this dog, and in this little desert trailer where you can like reach your hand up and touch the ceiling of this trailer. Like, and like, she's like crying, I don't want to go back up. There's nothing there for me. Like, I was like, okay, like this is definitely kind of like confirmation, you know?
Stuart, you never, when you met people and they asked what you did, you didn't say, I'm a drummer.
No.
That wasn't part of your identity?
I still love to drum, but it's one of those things in life. You just kind of let it go.
Drummer. All right.
Yeah.
Or I'm in between. I'm in between jobs right now.
Yeah.
I'm a drummer.
Yeah. I'm in between gigs.
Like. Yeah.
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 So another thing that really interested me when I met you is the fact that you decided just to get all your finances in order. And in order to do that, you had to let go of some big things, or financing the biggest, nicest house, the biggest, nicest cars, and just become debt free. Can you explain that journey a little bit to me?
Oh, yeah.
Because most people don't understand that or don't see why anybody would want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an extremely long journey, you know, in a process, especially if you include your home.
Yeah, I was going to say like that would be like podcast 2, 3, 4, 5, yeah. 6, 7.
Well, we look forward to it. Yeah. Sounds good.
But no, I think like just in to sum it up. So we found ourselves in a big mess in our mid-20s.
Financial disaster mess.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Right. So that was right around the 2008, 2009. But leading up to that, everyone was living large, right? And so money was free and easy. And we saw everyone else doing it and thought that's what we should do. So we borrowed up to our ears. And again, just being in construction, we not only borrowed for us personally, but we're like, oh, we're going to borrow for this. We're going to have a spec home lot over here.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to do this for the future. We're going to refi and buy this. And we were just doing what everyone else was suggesting was wisdom.
Because we were, I feel like at that age in our 20s, we were just like thirsty for knowledge and wisdom. And we were consuming a whole bunch of like information. And it was like, hey, you want to make it big? You know, you need to use other people's money and you need to do this. And like, so we were just like, yeah, that sounds awesome. Let's do that.
And I think as our culture would tell us, especially with, you know, social media and different things, is like the more complicated your financial plan is, the more successful it's going to be.
Mm.
The more little tips and tricks you've got up your sleeve, the more successful.
Yeah. This is the thing that nobody else knows.
And yes.
It makes really, really wealthy people obtain their success.
Yeah. And so we bought in. We bought in full send to the point that we had so much debt that we woke up at the age of 25 and I figured it out based on my hourly take home. I was obligated to work 28 days per month just to make our bare bones bills, which literally made me feel sick when I saw that. And we started looking at each other and going, what have we done? Like, this is what everyone is saying to do. We've played by the rules of society and we have done it. We have bought in and we are in a mess. And then I think the thing that makes it just even that much more frustrating is you did it all just to essentially, if you really get down to it, it's like, I just want to impress people.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't even doing it for my own peace of mind. It was very, very complicated. I was juggling 8 balls, trying to keep everything up in the air, really just to impress you, you know, with what I had. And that just honestly just made me mad. I was mad at myself. And we kind of had to look each other in the eye and say, we did this. We made this mess. And I feel like when we do that, when we own the mess, which is not a valued thing, it's not a popular approach.
No.
When you're overweight, it's hard to look yourself in the eye in the mirror and say, I did this.
Blame McDonald's.
No one. Yeah, exactly. No one put that food in front of me and said, eat it. Right. And it's a crazy illustration. But so one of our debts was to Ford Motor Company. And I remember saying, no one put a gun to my head at the dealership and said, sign that paper. I'm the one who willingly walked onto that lot.
Please let me have this.
Yes.
Alone.
So we had to go through that in our life and say, no one made me sign that mortgage. I did that. We chose to do that. And it made me really angry that we had chose so many burdens and so much weight for ourselves and all for a bit of a facade.
Yeah.
And so we just spent basically 12 years digging ourselves out of that hole.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, before we were like, we did that, it was this thing of like, we're sinking, like, we need more money, like, who can we get more money from? And then I remember it was like, I was talking on the phone with a loan person, and it was when, you know, the loans were basically just say that you made this amount of money. Just sign this paper and just say that you did it. And so when we had applied for a loan, it like said that we made way more than we make. And we're like, we can't sign this paper. Like, we just can't. So then we tried to do a different loan. And I remember being on the loan, on the phone with the loan lady. And you know you're in a bad spot when I'm on the phone with the loan lady about like, I don't know what to do. And she's like, I don't think this loan is going to help fix your problem. So I'm here. I am like on the phone with this loan lady being like, what am I going to do? And this loan lady's like, you probably need to not do this. I'm like, oh yeah. I think that was a turnaround for me of realizing, like, okay, this thing that everybody said was working and like mm-hmm. all these people are selling you that's like working and like, hey, like flip this house, do this, like pull out all the loan on other people's money. Like this isn't working anymore. And so I remember my mom had gotten me like a Barnes and Noble's gift card at the time. And I went to the store and got like, I was looking at different financial stuff books. And then I found Dave Ramsey and I was like, I'll get that. I don't know. I heard him be some financial guy. That's good.
Was it like Complete Money Makeover?
It was, yeah, but it was on
audio.
It was on audio.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, that I put him on and at first I was like, oh, I can't handle this guy's voice. Like, I don't think I can listen to this.
He sounds more like a preacher than a
financial. Yeah, and the way he was saying, I was like, I don't think I can listen to this guy. And then as I was listening to, though, like hearing like truth about stuff, I was like, oh, like, so we were going on a road trip and we listened to it the whole time. And that was definitely a shift.
And yeah, we had actively contributed to an education, but it was just an education of the opposite values. So we had invested heavily in audiobooks and books and CDs. And, you know, like we said, in our mid-20s, we were really interested in further education when it comes to finances.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like we had just ignorantly walked into a lot of these situations. We were pursuing debt.
Mm-hmm.
We were pursuing the things that were taught. So it took a lot of time as we began to look at this opposite approach to almost like begin to let your guard down a little bit, because you kind of come into it with preconceived notions, you know. And now we are those people. We are those people telling others like, no, you don't need a FICO score. You can actually get by without it. No, you can actually pay cash for a car. Did you actually realize that that's doable? It's not illegal in the United States,
right?
You know, because so many people... We have this education that we build up via YouTube and TikTok of these 2-minute videos saying, do it this way. So when you propose something that's polar opposite, you really have to break through the shell. And it took some time for that mindset to break through to us and go, wait, simpler?
Right. This is too easy.
No, yeah.
It can't be right if it's that easy.
Yeah. And I think what... the ultimate compass, though, for us in the process was, what is our, how does this feel? What is this doing to our peace?
Mm-hmm.
So you can talk and you can have all the head knowledge you want, but it's another thing when you're sleeping well at night. And it's another thing when you're starting to take time, you're actually getting 2 days off for a weekend again. And so we begin to actually feel the evidence of simpler financial choices, but we were still in a massive hole. So it took a decade, you know, 10, 11, 12 years, and we just began sacrificing. You know, I have a t-shirt to this day that says, you know, live like no one else so that you can live like no one else. We went hardcore. I mean, we lived in a 210 square foot travel trailer for 4 years with 2 kids. So the size of this room for 4 years, and 2 of our children were actually brought from the hospital to that. That was their home. That was our first home. But the reason that we sacrificed so hard was because we had such a big mess and we wanted it cleaned up as fast as possible. And so when we're helping or coaching other people, we're like, man, there's nothing that you're going to do that's going to shock us. Like, the more that you're willing to sacrifice, the more excited I am for you. I feel like the biggest compromise in life is when we want something really, really bad. For example, I want to lose 50 pounds, but I only want to lose 1 ounce a week.
Mm.
As a coach, I just kind of go like, come on, like, show me some fire. Give me something. Like, I want to see, how about 5 pounds a week or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, we just dug in. We dug in our heels and we got mad at ourselves and at our situation and at our debt. And we also made it really public. And so we we were embarrassed by it, but we used that to fuel us. So we, you know how when the people are doing like fundraising, they'll put like the little thermometer and they're saying like, this is how much we've raised. So we made one of those and we put it on the refrigerator in our house. So if you came over to our house for dinner, you could see the mess we were in, but you could also cheerlead with us or ask us questions or say, why? Like, why is this important to you guys? Why are you doing this? So we basically just, we wanted it, you know, in our face constantly as a daily reminder. I was the sole breadwinner for the family, but when I'd bring home the paycheck, I would hand it to Carrie and then she would steward it well. So it meant so much to me when I would come home and maybe it was just a $500, you know, credit card, but I'd come home and I'd see it like crossed off. So it was this really cool thing for our marriage too, because it was a, it was an awesome way to actually like work together to get the common goal.
That's all the time that we have for today.
Yep.
Thanks, Carrie, for being on the show.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
We'll have to have you on again. I have so many more questions that I want. I just want to pick your brains. But yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yep, yeah, thanks absolutely. So much.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.